Rob Haight is a Michigan-grown poet. He got his degrees from Western Michigan University and Michigan State, and has won several awards from the Poetry Resource Center of Michigan, the Kalamazoo Foundation, and the Arts Foundation of Michigan. He teaches at Kalamazoo Valley Community College and just released his third book of poetry called Feeding Wild Birds. Rob, welcome.
Thank you.
So in addition to teaching writing and literature, you also teach meditation.
Yes, I have done that for the last 10 years or so.
So how does that work into your poetry?
Well, I think that poetry tends to come from a quiet place, and meditation is a way of, on a regular basis, kind of tapping into that quiet place, learning to sit back and allow things to come and go without necessarily trying to act on them. And poetry writing is similar in that you usually work from kind of a silence. And if you try to push it, you try to force language onto the poems, usually I think it ends up being kind of frustrating. So when you're more comfortable with that waiting period, I think it ends up being kind of a more productive process in the long run.
And you have a poem called Zazen. Can you explain what Zazen means?
Zazen is sitting meditation. It's Japanese. It really means, if you were to translate it directly, sitting tranquility. And that poem is a poem that is just kind of reflecting on that open space that one can come into when they're sitting quietly.
And many of your poems are, of course, about Michigan's natural surroundings. It's called Feeding Wild Birds, after all. But you talk about them a lot in the way that they relate to humans. You know, sometimes you'll personify a plant, or you might talk about, you know, the sun and the moon and kind of those changing, what am I trying to say, light changing to darkness and the turning off of lights. You know, why is that important to do this kind of thing?
Well, I don't know that it is important necessarily, but, you know, humans are a part of nature too. And when the way that I see the world is a living thing. So for me, metaphors that kind of are either metaphors by themselves or end up being personification of natural elements just seem to come kind of naturally. I see the world as an animated place full of activity, full of life. And when one observes it carefully enough, I think you start to see that there's a lot of personality in what we would consider to be kind of lifeless, inanimate things. You know, you never learn. We were talking earlier about Zazen. The most beneficial way to see a good example of Zazen is watching a stone, because they're really good at sitting still.
In a previous interview, you explained how you don't really like to write poetry when you travel because you feel like you really have to know a place in order to write about it. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, I think that there are a lot of writers who are wonderful travel writers, and they can go into a place and through their observations, they can make it come alive for a reader. I've got nothing but the highest respect for them. But I've never been much of a traveling writer. I'm really not much of a traveler. The places that I enjoy spending time in, I return to over and over again. And for me, having a relationship with that place is what ends up generating my interest in writing about it. If I were to be, you know, 14 days in 13 cities or something like that, I don't think I would have the kind of relationship or the kind of emotional connection to a place that I would need to write well about it. I think others can do that, but I'm just not one of them.
And it really does seem like you do have a connection to this area. I mean, from the writing, you know, it really does sound like every day you are sitting in your backyard or somewhere like a park or someplace that you'd find a lot of nature and truly watching what's going on. And kind of, it's almost like news in a way.
Well, where I live, it is the news. I'm surrounded by vineyards and by woods and, you know, numerous cornfields. And every day I walk in it. So for me, that's just my daily life is walking among trees, among corn plants, down dirt roads, through the woods with my dogs. So that's just the expression of the surroundings where I live. I've lived there for over 20 years.
And so how does this book of poetry, you know, what were your goals with this book of poetry?
Well, that's a difficult question. I don't really think that I had many goals other than I had been writing the poems over a decade. And there came a point where these numerous individual poems I'd been publishing them in magazines individually. And I knew that that many of them were unified as far as being about place, being about landscape. And there was a far more overt spiritual element in these poems than there had been in my previous books. So at one point I finally sat down and said, you know, I need to put this together and see what I have. And, it took quite a long time of ordering the poems, organizing the collection according to the seasons in Michigan and finally getting it done. And, I set a date to finish it. And when that date came, I thought, I'm done. I actually wasn't done then, but, you know, it was pretty much complete at that point. And that for me is it's a different kind of work. I enjoy doing that, but it's not the same as the generating of the individual poems, which I enjoy more.
And what poems would you say had that kind of spiritual element? And I can hand you back the book if you need to look at it.
Well, you know, I think that there's probably an underlying spirituality in all of the poems, but I think more transparently the poems like Zazen and Dharma, Lectio Divina at Amazon.com, Dish Soap, poems like that are more directly related to a spiritual point of view. Some of the other ones, poems about my family, my parents, and some of the other poems about friends, I think aren't as obviously spiritual poems, but I do think that there is an underlying connectedness to spirit in those two. It may just not be quite as on the surface.
And I was going to talk about some of the poems that you did write about your parents. They're very powerful. Have they both passed away?
Yes, they have. My father died in 1989, so that was actually quite a long time ago. And my mother died 2 years ago. She was in her mid-90s when she finally did die. And the last 10 years of her life, she spent in a nursing home and was really unable to do anything other than to eat and to kind of just drift through her days. Those years for me were challenging, and watching her change in some ways. There were losses as far as her physical abilities, but also there, like in all things, there were some beneficial changes too. She became much more in the moment and much less judgmental.
And I think that's really interesting how you put that at Mother After the Stroke, I think it's called, you know, that she seemed to be more positive in not quite remembering, you know, who she likes and who she doesn't and, you know, things like that.
Right. All of that construction of the self that people do through their lives, which allows them at some point when it's constructed, I think, far too ornately, leads people to really believe in sometimes a lot of damaging opinions about others and about themselves. And that edifice and that hardness that they develop as they feel like they need to cling to these beliefs can be really limiting. So when in her case, because of the stroke that she suffered, and she was also kind of progressing into dementia at the same time. Much of what would define her and her rigidness just was lost, and she became a much more open person than she had ever been in her life. I think it was in some ways kind of wonderful.
And did you find that you were thinking about your dad a lot during that time, and that's kind of where those other poems came from, or talk about that?
Well, you know, even after a person's gone, there are all those effects of their lives on us. And it can be, I mean, most often I think we talk about it in terms of memory. You know, we have these memories of being with that person who's no longer with us. But there's also that whole collection of things that they once owned, or the things that they once possessed. And in the case of my father, he had been gone for many, many years, but I had this old box that had cufflinks in it, and some of those I passed on to my son so that if he ever wore a shirt that took cufflinks, which is kind of a rarity these days, he'd have these really great old cufflinks that were just a part of my father's standard apparel, you know, back in the 50s. And there's one poem that's called Photo ID of My Father that starts where I'm going through some things and I see his last driver's license, which I had kept all of these years, and looked at the picture and remembered what he was going through as he started getting toward the end of his life.
And going back to nature, segue there, you have a poem called, I think it's Ahimsa?
Ahimsa.
Ahimsa. I hadn't written it down. That really talks about the interesting relationship we have with nature, and especially some animals. You're talking about the mice in your house. And can you just talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, ahimsa is a term that means non-harming. And one of the vows that I've tried to operate by in my life is to not harm other living things. It's a goal, of course, that can never be fulfilled because in one way or another, we're quite often harming other things, often without even knowing it. You know, I mean, you step on an ant, it would be nice to avoid it, but sometimes you don't see it. And I have this relationship with mice that, you know, they're these small, on television, kind of cute little rodents, you know, but they just creep me out when they're in my house. And over the years, we've had them. We have a cat who used to be the mouser cat. That was what his job was around the house. But he's old now, and he's kind of in retirement. And so he would get some. And then there were places in the house where the mice could get where the cat would know that they were there, but he could not reach them. And so I was trying to, in that poem, I was trying to come to some resolution about this relationship of really not wanting to harm other living things, and yet at the same time not necessarily wanting to have them in my life either, because they can be really disgusting, gross, and dirty. And when I ended up rewriting that poem quite a few times, and I couldn't come to a satisfactory resolution to the poem, and I finally came to the conclusion that the reason why I couldn't was because I was not ever going to come to a satisfactory conclusion about it in my life. There would always be that tension there, that tension between wanting to be compassionate toward other living things and also at the same time not necessarily wanting to have vermin in my own living quarters. And so I just ended up leaving the poem open-ended, where they're still there and I'm still troubled by it.
I thought that was a really interesting take to think about that kind of push and pull that we have with all living things, and not necessarily negatively, you know, but just that idea that, you know, we both have our own goals, and, you know, even with animals, sometimes we can kind of cross paths in ways that one or both of us don't want.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, even as we speak, I have two rows of green bean plants that have been completely decimated by the rabbits at my house. And I thought they were going to make it because they were looking pretty flush for a while. They were growing really well. And I don't have my garden fenced, which is a mistake in some ways. But I kind of invite them in, and they've gone wild. They've just mowed them down. So, that you know, it's just part of living with animals.
As it is. I wanted to talk about Another Morning, that poem. Now, can you explain that a little bit? It sounded like it was almost a picture of suburbia, but I wasn't really sure.
Well, I think it could be, suburbia is the picture that I would draw from it too, though I think it could be any subdivision where the people who have moved into the upper middle class go. And it's a poem about, in the poem, it's addressed to you. It's a second person poem. A person who has all of the trophies of professional success and yet is feeling unfulfilled. Who feels that, their life in many ways has lost the kind of magic that that they may have once had, and that their worldly success has been unable to give them. So that was the question that I was posing in the poem. It wasn't about anyone in particular. It wasn't about myself or anything like that.
I think, let me look through here and see if I've gone through all of my notes. Oh, well, you know, what's next for you? You know, what are you working on, or what would you like to do, or where would you like to be with your poetry?
Well, I don't have much of an agenda when it comes to that kind of thing. I work in and out of poetry. I write prose, essays, and articles from time to time. And I'm always working on poems, but I never work on poetry as a project. I've never done that in the 30 years that I've really seriously been writing poetry. I've never sat down and come up with some kind of plan for a book or plan for a series of poems. It's just not the way I work. There are other people who do that, and I have nothing but the highest respect for them and their discipline. But for me, poetry is something that comes out of my life, and I've always tried to minimize the extent to which my life comes out of poetry. There are those things that are involved with my life as a poet, doing readings, being a creative writing teacher, things like that, reading other poets, which I just love to do. But I tend to approach poetry as just kind of the exhalation of my experience, an opportunity to organize and to make sense of the experiences that I have. And since I can't really predict what I'm going to be valuing and what I'm going to be doing as far as my life is concerned, I'm not really sure what direction my poems will go in. I know that once I've been with a subject matter for some time, I usually tend to not really want to continue working with that. So in my last book, before Feeding Wild Birds, I was writing a lot about rivers, and I was spending a lot of time trout fishing. And I love writing about rivers. They are so dynamic, and the scenery there and the olfactory sense of being there is all just fantastic. But I realized that I could write about rivers, you know, quite easily over and over and over again and probably never get tired of it. But at some point, I thought that it would be best to move away from that and to work in areas that I hadn't worked before. And so then the poems that came after that were more poems that were related to my direct landscape, the surrounding area of my home and life. And I'm not sure what will come next, so we'll see. Mother After the Stroke. Your thoughts have become butterflies that light for a moment to twitch their wings, then lift off into air again as you begin a sentence and stop after a few words, looking around to see which direction the idea might have flown. There is a grace in this, the plank-by-plank construction of your personality left in a heap after the storm, the bigotry and suspicion that once housed you, softening to its pulpy conclusion, leaving you exactly where you are, smiling to everyone who passes. They are all your friends now, also beautifully human to you, the words you can no longer cage, fluttering around you. Walking. A darkness joins me each day out into the fields, past the ponds and along the swamp. It leaves me in the cool, thick pines, then returns on the dirt road next to the cornfield. I've become as quiet as this darkness, silent as the sunlight pouring over the field. The weed and I understand each other. The lone tree in the middle of the 80 acres, that's me. I love the mornings and the evenings, the edges of light and shadow, how the trees become charcoal drawings on the pale paper of the sky, the bee balm and lavender bloom of clouds behind them, how the silence pools at the base of trees, exhales the suggestion of night into the air where six geese etch a line across the empty sky. Dish soap. When washing dishes, just wash dishes. Thich Nhat Hanh. For a few weeks in May, that old scrub lilac blooms with the most delicate purple petals, and with others nearby, fills the air with fragrance. The cherry, too, with its wine-colored sprigs, and the magnolia, each flower ready to string into a garland. Then another spring storm loses the flowers to the wind, leaves growing out of cloudy green weather. You might take this as a metaphor for our lives, those few moments of radiance, the months of drab routine. But I am washing dishes, smelling rain on the breeze. Each plate sparkles. The suds leave white blossoms on my hands.
Great. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.